You want to get started?
Yeah, indeed. I was doing some study. Basically, with Upstreak, I was doing study on the different machine learning techniques, and I haven't finished yet, but I was starting out different pros and cons with respect to our goals of each machine learning technique.
Mm.
And also, I did some initial study of the incorporation of noise to address the issue of robustness.
Okay.
I missed last week's meeting, so what's happening?
In terms of submission?
What are we doing?
I'm doing basically because everybody points out the related work why are we using ANN with respect to other machine learning techniques. So I'm modifying the related work sufficiently.
Okay.
So idea is to create a table where we can qualitatively justify the pros and cons of each machine learning technique. And also non-machine learning techniques, and also with the same table address the related work and what the related work addresses specifically, the goal of those works in a table format so that the reviewers can just see the table and have a feel of what the status.
But there was a high level direction that we had in terms of contrasting and justifying our use of ANN versus things like Bayesian networks and SVNs, which is to say that those techniques are used mostly for classification and not necessarily for exact value prediction, whereas ANNs are more suitable for doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just a few minutes back, you also mentioned that you found a study which actually did that proved that something like that.
There's a good study of that.
Yeah, so there is a study which says what?
I haven't read the paper yet because I couldn't get it from the home. It's like they did from the abstract, they say that they are trying to find the pros and cons of Bayesian network and artificial neural network.
Mm-hmm.
So they are saying that Bayesian network is basically better for classification or metric attribution kind of problem. But ANN is better in terms of absolute response time prediction. Because what we are doing is basically predicting response time.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases, they specifically did some study to show that ANN is superior in those scenarios.
I mean, it would also be good to include the insight that they came up with, why ANN is better for problems like these, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that would be more interesting for the reader,
yeah,
if you can dig that out.
And the schedule of the preparation is reasonable?
I don't know the venue. It's not probably that reasonable, it's workshop.
Okay. Well, what about the authors?
Authors, so one is from Oxford Lab and another is from IBM TJ Watson.
That's reasonable.
That's reasonable, yeah.
But if it's, yeah, exactly, if it's an unknown entity,
yes, because sometimes I get paranoid about for some publication from
based on our basis on that, we could just send a small pointer to that,
yeah,
like some studies show that,
yeah,
we shouldn't like focus on that study.
Yeah.
We should more like generic comparison between two quality.
But the good thing we should get into the battle that AI is the best machine learning method.
Yeah.
No,
we
don't
share
them.
I think as long as we can justify to a certain extent and then say, okay, we have some reason to focus on AI. Because no one can expect that you will apply each and every technique and prove in one paper.
Right. And I think we can make a statement to the effect that we found that ANN is sufficiently accurate in predicting performance for the kind of systems that we are targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And if we say that, we're not saying that any other technique
exactly
cannot do that, but we're saying ANN is good enough for this problem.
Some software thing.
Yeah.
And what about the SVM? Means getting
a Means is sending a paper, but I haven't, because SVM I am not confident how to contrast, because the specific application of SVM is text recognition or image recognition, something like that. I mean, trying to find out an image, known image. Those are the application of SVM, the usual application of SVM.
Right.
There was another paper in Mascot's 2010, which is also virtual machine resource management from NC State. it uses a common filter to predict resource demand.
That's the paper you.
No, that's another one.
Okay.
That's different. But I was trying to say that the use of common filter is similar to the use of SVM in this case. It's basically treating the resource demand of the system as a time series. Okay. So it's different from what we are doing. We are trying to create a model that can map from the certain input to certain output, right? And resource allocation to performance. Right? But when you treat the system's resource demand in time series, it does not matter. It does not matter what is the internal model there. What matters is, given the history of this virtual machine's demand, what would be this virtual machine demand in the next moment?
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like predicting how the stock market will go.
Okay.
Stock market factors can go up, can go down, right? But there's a pattern there.
Or in the next time interval, what is going down or going up?
Something like forecasting technique. It's forecasting,
okay? Okay.
Right. Instead of modeling. Okay. That's how it's really
used.
Yeah, also, you should also include that the common filter paper. That was recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. I mean, if we can say that these techniques are used, for instance, in forecasting and time series prediction or time series forecasting, then people can get a better sense for what these models have been used for before. Because someone might think that, okay, you know, these other techniques have used SVMs or Kalman filter to solve exactly the same problem that we are solving, right? And in which case they might want us to compare with those. But if you say that no, they're actually looking at a different problem, then we can avoid that confusion for the reader. Or a comment which says, oh, why don't you compare with all of these other techniques that have already been used for this?
If you have time in hand, I'm just giving it for you, you may think of trying to apply SVM because you already have the data. And SVM is actually the package software, like ANN kind of thing.
I think everything is a package software. Yeah, just learn how to use a tool.
Mm-hmm. It's always pretty easy to use.
I
personally use it. There is a software called HDM Lite. HDM Lite. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the other relevant technique is fuzzy logic, which is something that I've been using or not. So that can actually be used for both. Can be either used for modeling.
Mm-hmm.
That's very useful. Like fuzzy modeling, that's also a nonlinear modeling method. Or it can also be used for prediction, fuzzy prediction.
Mm-hmm.
That's the paper I gave you yesterday. That paper compares fuzzy logic based prediction to SVM.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, I see.
So, yesterday I actually looked at a bunch of articles comparing SVMs to ANNs. And it seems like if you just gloss through articles and if you take it high level, it seems like people seem to suggest that SVMs are more powerful than ANNs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just sending an email to everyone to list some of them. But one of the article, it basically says that, one second, let me just go and read verbatim so that I don't.
For which application? Is it the all different application or the same similar kind of application that you are talking about?
So I think different papers are talking of different applications, but some of them are sort of more general. For example, there is one article that says that the reason that SVMs often outperform ANNs in practice is that they deal with the biggest problem with ANN. SVMs are less prone to overfitting. And it says, unlike ANNs, the computational complexity of SVMs does not depend on the dimensionality of the input space. And then another thing it says is ANN uses empirical risk minimization, whereas SVM uses structural risk minimization. So I don't understand all the technical details they are saying, but based on some of the casual reading, it seems like people are saying SVM is as good or slightly better than ANNs.
And the paper that Sajeev found actually makes the opposite conclusion.
That's not the SVM, Bayesian
networks. Oh, Bayesian networks, I see.
I think Bayesian networks I can agree because they are not as powerful, plus they are more into classification. But I think SVM, in terms of what it can do, is roughly exactly what ANN can do. It's not any it's not limited to anything else. And there are papers which have compared literally both of them. And I found another paper actually which is comparing character recognition in Hindi using SVM and ANN. And their accuracy on SVM is like 91-98%, and on ANN is roughly 80%.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I remember, you know, my advisor had this parallel line of work, which was SVMs, right? And most of the problems that they used to look at were classification. Even the character recognition that you're talking about is a classification problem, right? So I've seen SVM used mostly for classification class of problems. And I'm not sure. Well, you could argue that, okay, you could actually split up the output space into classes and say and use SVMs that way.
That's what I tried to say in the last one. I was also trying to hear very carefully what Ajay, the kind of points that Ajay was mentioning. I want to see a paper that basically compared the SVM and ANN based on the number of classes. I agree completely what in terms of dimensionality and structural thing, etc. But in terms of the number of classes, if the number of classes are in terms of like 1,000 or 10,000 or infinite, then how the SVM performs.
Given that we have the data, how hard it is for us to run SVM also and compare it with
exactly.
ANN?
That's exactly my point, because if we prove that our system performs quality good with the SVM, then a lot of these things can be nullified. Really. Mm-hmm. No one will come back with the Bayesian or anything else, because SVM in terms of classification problems so far, SVM is kind of like a god methodology right now.
True, that's what I feel too, that SVM and ANN, they seem to be on the higher end of complexity, and I think it would be good to at least compare these two. Everything else, we can cite others to say that these two are more well known.
Yeah, and in terms of the effort, just to give a boost or confidence to Shoji, in terms of effort, I can say that it's not a lot of effort to integrate the SVM. You have the data and you just put it. It's a commonly, it takes a commonly limited file. You just
some kind of implementation.
Commonly limited file. It takes a give the commonly limited file and create another model and run the training test data. Really, this is very simple in terms of.
So the methodology is very similar. You not have
methodology is very simple. You put a training data and do a testing data.
Okay.
But don't you have to partition the output space into classes, and or does it do that automatically?
There is automatically where the automatic classification exists.
Okay.
Also.
Okay.
Like it can do auto classification. You don't need to manually classify.
Okay.
But they will come up with a class. So this data with a class A, this data class B, this data class B, and etc.
Okay. Well, if it's not too much effort, then certainly it will benefit the paper substantially.
It will substantially definitely benefit the paper. Now, that depends on the how much time you have, and it will depend on that.
I think from a time standpoint, we are okay, as far as I understand.
No, actually, I'm targeting to send the next paper, the resource allocation paper, in by October, mid-October.
Okay.
So if I have more time for that paper, it's better for me.
This will take 1 week, not more than that. Even if it takes 1 week, I'll be surprised.
What's that for? SPC? US. Where is it?
And I'm sure if you check with one in different students in your lab, in the CS department, so one of the students is definitely using SPM, I'll be surprised if anyone is not using it.
Yeah, probably. That's true.
Because it's very popular. If you have a pattern recognition or those kind of group, like a classification people.
Yeah, it was like when I used to hear some of my, you probably know a lot more about this, but some of the other guys in the lab when I was doing my PhD present, SVM related, was always high dimensional space.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everything was super high dimensional.
I think it's probably the right way. If we can spend 1 week just to and have the experiment with the SVM, the modeling data and the accuracy results,
then we can more conclusively address the comment.
We can bypass a lot of the critique reviews or something.
Possibly, yeah. I think so. I agree. Yeah, that would probably help us a lot.
Then I think we don't need to compare with other techniques. That's
no,
one
we don't
technique.
Need to compare other techniques. BCM is this question that I want.
Yeah, and, well, it might still be worth doing the simpler techniques like regression analysis to show that, well, there is complexity in the model, right? To
we
in the model regression analysis.
We already have that in the paper.
We have
the multi.
Oh, we do that. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we have that already. Okay.
So I think one machine learning technique would be a good aid. It is not too complex.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion. Let's do that.
ACM Lite.
I have used ACM Lite. That doesn't mean that ACM Lite is the best one. Someone recommended me ACM Lite, so I started ACM Lite and I've just used ACM Lite. I loved it. I believe MATLAB also has some ACM Lite.
Yeah,
MATLAB
has
it. So, if you're comfortable with the MATLAB, you can stay with that. And R also has some ACM Lite.
Maybe, yeah.
Everyone has better nowadays.
Okay, so should we look at the data, or you want to talk about some?
I think I what I did is that, as I explained last time, as Kaushik addressed last time, that I took the training data, pick up random points, so and change those points based those training results by certain amount, and then run the exact training the testing data, and find the accuracy. With the model. So I run two tests, one with the first with the, I select 10% points as noisy, randomly.
No, this is normal training data means no noise.
No noise. No
okay.
Noise.
Okay, and so those are the accuracy numbers for
those are using single model, not with clustering or multi-resolution.
Just a single model, okay. Yeah. And so all of these are single model?
All of these are single model. Then I change pickup points randomly, 10% of the points, total training data, and put either plus 50% deviation or minus 50% deviation.
Okay.
And those are the results for that.
Okay.
It seems if there is not much.
Not much variation.
Not much variation.
Surprisingly, some noise actually makes the 90th percentile go down. It actually is a different reason. In some cases.
It's actually basically because the ANN has those itself has some noise in the modeling. So we have to ensemble. So the choice of those models in the ensemble data may change those a little bit, those metric a little bit.
I see. But the median error seems like, even the median error sometimes goes down. Interesting. There's this other variant we talked about where we're going to make all points noisy by a certain percentage, right?
But that we need to do it carefully because we have to do also all the points but random variations to each point, right?
Yeah. And this is also something like that?
No, this is either plus, either minus.
Okay. So this is either plus 50% or minus 50%.
Or minus 50%, but random points.
How do you make them noisy? How do you create noise?
It's basically, you have the training data, so pick up points normally. Pick up some random points and tweak it a little bit.
Change the data?
Change the data. Why is because in production data maybe you may have noisy data in the production trace. So just to reflect that we do it that way. Because my data is very very fine grained and it's perfect data.
But then you are actually altering the values of the data?
Yeah.
So even in production, all data are real, right? There's no noise. There's no arbitrary noise. What's the justification of this?
Yeah, I think there was a comment from the reviewer about how robust is your model to be able to be used in production when there is.
No,
and we kind of interpreted that as production
Maybe the production that Maurice Bank introduced, we say for example, for some reason you're one of the bandits goes up.
That would be
like a failure condition.
Okay. Unexpected contention.
Unexpected condition.
But I think those scenarios would be more meaningful if we can use them in our experiments. So we can say suddenly there's something out of control, and say, I don't know if it's
so. This is kind of simulating the
I know,
consequence.
So the question is how realistic is this? Or we can justify that we are doing the worst case, and that would be okay too. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's not clear how best to model noise for our use. I think we are kind of taking the easy route here to say, okay, noise is random, and there is a certain percentage of data that's noisy. And that percentage can vary, and the level of or the amplitude of the noise can also vary. So we are looking at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, if we want to consider realistic scenarios, there's probably infinite number of such scenarios.
Yeah. That will be too complex to simulate.
Yeah.
Simulating that noise.
So we kind of came up with two classes of noise. One is every point is noisy, and the other is certain fraction of the points are noisy, and then the level of the noise is a variable, right? So that's how we are, the first attempt at modeling noise. I don't know if that's the best way. But even the testing data will have noise, right? So
yeah.
If everything is noisy, then that's kind of weird. And that's something you brought up last time. Well, how do we deal with that? Not clear. But I mean, this may give some confidence in the modeling. Right? What if there is some noise in the data?
Of course. Yeah.
Does your model still work? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, the point is that if there are some outliers in the data, the ANN can separate this out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could also maybe try, okay, 5% of the points are really noisy.
Like 200-500%?
Yeah, something like that. Okay. Yeah. So what happens in that case? Does ANN carefully ignore them or no?
Okay. And another condition with all noise, with variation of 1-20% randomly.
Yeah.
So then.
And I guess we'll have to do this for the model that we show is the most
accurate.
The most accurate, which is
sub-model.
Sub-modeling and plus with clustering and things like that.
Sub-modeling is basically the clustering.
Right, right.
But for these things, you don't need to run any experiment, right? You can always analyze.
Yeah, with the modeling, with the ANN.
So plus the program.
It's pretty much on the Excel sheet.
It'll be so much easier. You can know how to use MATLAB.
You can do write
script, right? The work you are doing. Yeah. All those algorithms, they all exist in MATLAB toolboxes.
But I think a lot of the probably time that you spent is just sort of gathering the data itself, right? I mean, to set up the experiments automatically and to run all the different configurations.
Yeah, but those scripts have already been written.
Okay.
I think this.
Oh, this is manual.
This modeling could have been better written if I use if I use MATLAB.
I see.
Because it's all it takes the Excel pro. I think MATLAB takes an Excel file as well, right?
Any kind of format.
Any kind of format. So it's very useful.
You import data and then you can just manipulate.
Here I need to not separate bits to process it in a way so that the ANN tool can understand.
What sort of conclusion do we draw from this, that can we handle noise or can't we handle it?
To me, it seems like we can, because the distribution did not change a whole lot, right, at least the way I interpret it.
I mean, it seems like if the numbers are really bad already, then adding noise is probably not making it any worse.
Right.
but if the numbers were better, for example, for the bidding case, then the noise actually made the numbers worse.
Some metrics, like average metrics, are a little bad. But the median, you can see, it's acceptable. It's not, it's getting worse. Definitely it's getting worse, but it's not, it's acceptable.
Even I mean, 90th percentile is also getting worse. All three got worse, essentially. But the surprising thing is that in FileBench OLTP, which is also low error, there the change is very small. I mean, it seems inconclusive based on these three data points.
Well, to me, it seems like we can draw a conclusion to the effect that noise does not substantially degrade the accuracy so that the model becomes unusable.
Only in the case where noise is already, the accuracy is already very poor.
No, even on the FileBench OLTP, it's pretty good.
Yeah, so the thing is, the only two points, the valid points, are the bidding and OLTP. But in one case, it got worse. In other case, it probably didn't change much. So it seems like given that there are only two data points, it's hard to just conclude.
Well, we have more workloads, right?
Yeah. I just need some time to do it.
And also, we can run multiple percentage in terms of noisy. You have 10%, you can go to 10, 20, 30. And similarly, the deviation, you can have different values.
You need to run the best case scenario, that is, the
best modeling.
Whatever the best scenario. Best
some modeling.
Yeah. In this case, and see how the noise impacts.
Okay.
Because if the error is too high, then
In my case, the testing data is actually changing a bit. I cannot keep the test. I was thinking that our testing data to keep it as it is, but it's actually changing because of the reason. Because
I mean, are you also introducing noise in the testing data?
I'm not introducing the noise in the testing data, but the biasness of the testing data is changing because I'm not using the absolute value of the testing data. I'm dividing it by some value which is the highest performance metric I have seen.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say I introduce some noise, and in the training data, combining training and testing, I pick up, I found a performance metric which is the highest, and that performance metric is actually the noise
mm-hmm.
data.
Mm-hmm.
So that can change the biasness of the testing point.
Right.
Because I'm dividing it by the maximum observed value.
Right.
So it's not actually the exact testing point.
Oh. No, but isn't that what we would do if we want to use ANN with noise, isn't it?
That's why I'm following it.
Yeah.
If we have to do it, like, I don't know what if there is noise or something. I just
right, you don't know if there is noise.
It's exactly.
Right. So you would have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to report whatever we find.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do it for the submodeling case.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I can definitely see, I understand all this worriedness, but I can also see that wherever the errors are low, it didn't impact that much early. Like, it didn't send the error from 8.82 to like a...
Maybe other two benchmarks, if you use other two benchmarks, then we can conclusive. We can
do the other two benchmarks and take the case scenarios, the Ruby's bidding, Ruby's browsing, the modeling that is best applicable early in the scenario.
Okay.
So if the submodeling is best applicable scenario, Ruby's building, take the submodeling. If the multi-modeling is the best applicable scenario in the Ruby's browsing, then take that one. What are the best case scenarios each of those cases? Because you're basically comparing your whole approach. You're not just comparing, you're just applying the whole, and your whole approach includes all the three models and picking up the best model that is applicable in that particular scenario. So that is also part of your whole methodology.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to be included.
Okay.
Okay, folks, I need to go grab some lunch. I'll be back in 5-7 minutes.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure. there are some papers that are adjacent that I guess you can look at, and if you can use SVMs and see what accuracy we get.
That I would try first, I think.
Yeah. Well, we kind of were very careful with ANNs, right? We just did not use ANNs out of the box. We did the clustering, we did the sub-modeling on the ANNs. Now with the SVMs, I don't know whether we have to do similar tuning to extract the best out of the SVMs. I don't know if there's something
that automatically does this clustering, right, internally?
You cannot do such as sub-modeling and SFA. That will be too cumbersome on the SVM, really.
Mm-hmm. No, but yeah, the reason I'm saying is that because to get extract the best out of the ANN, we had to do all of those additional things. So maybe even doing nothing, SVM is better than ANN, right? We don't know. We haven't run those experiments yet. But if it's not, say SVMs are worse, then some reviewer may say, oh, you did all these nice things with the ANN to actually reduce the errors. You use SVM, you treat SVM like a second class citizen and not really try to improve it, and then you cannot cover. This is not an apples to apples comparison.
I agree with that too, but I also think that even if you don't report the data, if we run the experiment and have the data, then even if we don't report in the table, we can write in a much, much confident way that why SVM is
better. We can write two or three sentences. For regression, we actually did go to that extent, that we did apply all those fancy techniques and report the. So if there is an apple to apple comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But if for say SVM we cannot do that, we just say 2-3 lines that we did initial experiments with SVM and found out.
And SVM is a nice technique for him because if he learns the SVM, that is a good learning for him itself, really, because it's definitely a good technique to know for the researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I found this paper I was looking for since last night. This was a paper from Abby Armaden. They used SVM for storage measurements.
Oh, really?
I presented this paper in 2006 when I was at UF. You are really good.
Okay.
I have a good memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I finally think that it's published in 2005 in USENIX.
Oh, USENIX Technical Conference?
Yeah.
A little bit more related.
This is but the only one that I see used SVM for storage for resource management.
Okay.
I went back to my previous maps website. I went to the forum, the reason group forum, I dig out my tips. But we should present it to my user.
Now, do they do it for classification or problem diagnosis or something?
I forgot, but it looks like it's kind of like doing regression for modeling. So
mm-hmm.
I didn't read it yet. I completely forgot what I presented.
Okay.
But, is for workload, for creating workload models
mm-hmm.
for services.
I see. Workload models. Okay. That sounds like what we are doing.
I think again, this is for predictions, for predicting the workload, I think.
Oh, it's forecasting.
Forecasting.
So yeah, I mean forecasting is different than what we are doing, right?
Yeah, but again, still compare the accuracy.
How can we use it in our case? Right?
Yeah, actually, we don't have a workload. Do we have a workload? Yes, we can. So same thing about this. If you run, No, we can't because we don't treat our workload as time series, right? So no, we treat our workload as a single entity. So how do we compare?
You give the input and you have the output. You input and the SVM.
And then the SVM will just give you the classes, right?
It will give you the classes, and then you give the input again in the training from the testing data. That will give the classes, and then you map the classes to the output values, which output values were. So each class will basically have output.
That does depend on how many classes you're creating.
That's what my problem is. It will have a problem with the classes, basically.
Okay. But if it's a value, then we will have a lot of classes.
That's exactly my problem. number of classes is infinite.
Yeah.
Theoretically, the number of classes will be infinite. If you try to apply it in this scenario, then you will see that how the
SVM. Maybe based on my experience, it may not be that bad, SVM.
Mm-hmm.
Because the valid training data has
some classes. Regions. Mm-hmm.
What I was thinking before is,
actually
for online case.
I tell you where I have applied. I have applied SVM for the dictionary cases to classify each and every English words.
Mm.
There are about 250,000 kind of English words, valid English words, and we tried to apply the SVM in that classification. It failed almost.
Oh.
It could not. So basically, given a word in a sentence, I want to identify what is the meaning of the word automatically.
Okay.
And how did I do this? I basically assume that each word is defined by the context of the words that is around it. Really. So that is the feature set of each and every word. So if you take each sentence, that is the feature set, and each word is the output. Really. Then we give the input, then that basically means 250,000 classes, and it could not do that. Really. So from that experience, I can say that is, if the number of classes are too high, then it becomes impossible, almost. But
it might derive coarse-grained classes and still produce reasonable accuracy, right?
It might produce reasonable accuracy. So, unless in one scenario it didn't apply, that doesn't mean that in another scenario it did not apply. So, that's what I'm saying, that explore SVM, even if you don't report the data into the table format in the paper, whatever knowledge you will gather out of applying the SVM will be useful to have your confidence. Because if someone questions you that in your job interview or in your conference,
then
you can at least more comfortably defend that.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I guess next steps are SVM
and
the noise characterization and completing of the related work table.
Yeah.
Okay.
I already did for the regression those non-step machine learning techniques, and not only machine learning, I include the Bayesian network.
Mm-hmm.
I still have to do the SVM and the reinforcement learning. That's one of my agenda.
Right. And the goal to send this is not HPCA, it's Eurosys, is what you're thinking?
Let's think about later, right?
Yeah, SPCA, no, I just want to know what the deadline is.
SPCA is 29th or 30th August.
August,
okay.
So that's also doable?
That's certainly doable, yeah.
Okay, and the Eurosys is afterwards?
Eurosys is October.
Right.
And we don't have any deadline in the September.
Right.
Any relevant deadline.
Right. Yeah, I think both are good targets. To me, given that if you think they're equivalent, we should send it to HPCA, it does it earlier.
But other thing I want to mention is at this point, probably if you think of doing parallel work a little bit, like when you're working on refining this work, you need to focus on the other projects also, like implementing the algorithm and etc.
Right, yeah, I think that's important, because if you have too long a break, then you'll forget what you did and may have to do some things again, or at least relearn what you already done, right?
And it's a classic scenario. Every one of us has one paper is contributed. It's almost like a finish, but trying to find out a place really, where we are starting another project. So that's, I think it's a common scenario.
Is the deadline for your paper or the resubmission?
No, one is the resubmission, that is this one.
This is the one that we have.
Another new one is the algorithm of the...
So which one will we work on first? The resubmission?
I'm working on both, so that's what he's saying, that work on both.
So is the HPCA for the resubmission or for the new one?
That's what we haven't decided.
It will be hard for the resubmission, right? Because that's still based on ANN, that's not so much different than our prior HPCA paper, right?
Right, but we could always, we could create a technical report and reference that in our submission of the full work and say that, okay, in follow-up work we have done so and so, and here is the paper, here is a link to the paper, go read it if you want.
Okay. You mean the resource allocation?
Yes.
Yeah, the Taliban policy said yes.
No. I don't know whether HPCA or not. Yet,
okay.
But
no, he's saying that resubmitting this ANN work to HPCA won't be a good idea.
Oh, is it?
That's his.
Because it's a similar kind of work that
the same community,
nice.
Yeah.
But when you review the paper, do you really look at the previous paper that the
Office
submitted in the
conference? We have references, and then, yes. I do check how much we contribute is there, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. If it's even from the same conference, that will make it even harder, because all the reviewers were probably from the same community, and they know that there's such a
maybe that's a concern. Let's see.
But again, HPCA won't be that relevant community, that's the thing. We do have one paper in HPCA, but there is always a risk.
Well, there is one bullet out of, I don't know, maybe 15 bullets or 10 bullets that talks about performance models.
Yeah, but the committee members are not the one we are referring, or they do work in those kind of fields.
Okay.
They're pretty much architecture oriented.
Okay.
We came up with the USC, another one came up. That's the one.
VEE
was the one.
Okay. Well, let's make the papers ready and then we can figure out what to do.
But don't stop the work on the algorithm.
Yeah. Actually, did a lot of coding on the implementation.
Yeah.
I have to finish that.
So where are we at? I mean, very quickly.
It's the implementation of the algorithm with all the complete framework.
The framework is what you're working
on. Yeah. I've finished the implementation of the algorithm itself, but I'm finishing the framework. Because unless we create a framework, we cannot test the algorithm. That's the problem.
And this framework will allow you to dynamically change the allocations, measure the impact or effect of that, and run the algorithm in an online system.
Yeah.
Right, assuming that the model is trained offline.
Yes.
Because the algorithm does require online intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So with respect to that framework, where are you putting this algorithm or the whole engine that runs the algorithm? Where are you putting it? In the hypervisor or in one of the VMs? And how do you control?
That I haven't figured out, but it could be one of the VM or in a separate client machine.
Okay. And that, so you'll have to communicate over the network to get predictions and,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
It will be good if you can think about the architecture diagram of the whole scenario.
Yeah, we did have a discussion about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are the steps?
No, that's the lower level. He's talking about the more higher level.
I'm talking about like which component resides in which machine, and how they're communicating and etc.
Right. So you're using ESX, right?
Yeah.
So with ESX, you can change allocations using something similar to DOM 0 or.
Mm.
Or is it?
It's a VM actually, the whole installation, because it comes as a package.
Mm.
So it's actually a VM with all the libraries installed,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Perl script.
Okay, and that's a privileged VM, right?
It's not a privileged VM, it's just a VM.
No, but I guess what I'm saying is that to change allocations on other VMs,
mm-hmm.
you need to have super user privileges. Right.
You can pass the super user information from that through that VM.
You can do it from anywhere. And you can use a web service interface.
I know, but I'm
it's
saying that if you want to script this thing,
you can draw anywhere.
We already have the script because I did the script while collecting the data.
Okay.
Because I had to change
right.
the.
I guess so. The question is, you can run this script even from a client remotely and.
I have to use a different version of.
Okay, but you're running it on the server right now.
On the server, in a VM?
VM on the server.
You're using Perl for the interface, not web service interface.
Perl interface,
yeah.
And then that, I remember discussing this with you last time, that one of the challenges is to is to invoke the algorithm from within this Perl or whatever other program that does the allocation, right? Because that's written in C and this is written in Java or something. You wrote this thing in Java,
mm-hmm.
right? So have you kind of made progress on making them a single executable or?
No, I'm still doing that.
Okay, but is that your direction or do you want to launch the C program each time you want to predict?
Your algorithm is a C program or Java?
Java.
Java.
The ANN.
The model is a C program.
So when you want to do predictions, you have to invoke a C program.
Okay, when you get the program, then C program, then the algorithm is in Java.
Hmm.
And then your
API is in Perl.
API is in Perl.
API is in Perl.
Okay, and who is communicating to whom?
Why don't you use Perl for scripting? It's not a script, it's a complete algorithm. The Java, or system algorithm. Oh, okay. Oh, I have to use, low over end, I have to use the C.
Mm-hmm. But I think you're using Java.
Yes. C is for the AN, right?
But your Java algorithm can be converted into Perl, right? You can write into Perl, right? Because Perl, from Perl you can easily call C.
That's not the problem. From Java it is a little complicated.
From Perl to Java will be difficult. And it will be, if you want to call, if you need to call from Perl to Java, it will be slow also.
Actually that's not the way I'm thinking though.
Then?
I'm thinking in a way like an automated script, whatever the script is. Because we don't need
to... What do you mean by script? It's Unix script.
Unix script.
Okay.
A bash script, which will have a process. Like how they use it one step to another. So these are the big different components. First it will compute, it will invoke the algorithm. And the algorithm will take the input from the bash file, and produces the output in a file.
Mm-hmm.
And the same bash program will read that output from the file and do the resource allocation changes.
Okay. Using Perl?
Using Perl script.
And, okay, so...
Because the algorithm is actually not doing allocation, the algorithm is just suggesting what the matrix should look like.
Okay.
It's not doing its allocation in the inside.
Where is the ANN coming now? ANN
is coming on the prediction values, because we need to compute those delta P gain, delta P loss.
The algorithm is calling the ANN.
The algorithm is calling the ANN.
From Java, it's calling the C.
Okay. Okay, that part you have, if you convert it into a single executable, it
yeah, that can be doable. That's just taking
and Java, how are you calling the C?
There's some libraries you can call Java from C. So
yeah.
You only need to run the executable, right?
Yeah.
So this is, I think this runtime class, you can run any executable in Java.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's easy. You can, there's one class you can inherit and you can run any executable.
Yeah, well, you could do that, or you could figure out a way to call the C function directly from the Java program.
No, there is a way.
Because...
That may be tricky,
JNN is very simple.
Yeah?
Yeah. Opposite is tricky. From C to Java calling is tricky.
Hmm.
From Java to C calling is pretty straightforward.
Okay.
What is that, JNI?
Java Native Interface.
Nice. I know it's possible, but I don't know how to do it.
I've done that long back, so I'm sure it's now...
But the shell script will have different processes.
Right. Yeah, you could... Yeah, yes, that
and
makes
you,
sense.
And you will run all these three things in a system that is not your measuring, right?
That I need to figure out. Because you need to run all these things. I don't want to run, so I have to figure out how to do it.
Because all these things will have some overhead. Creating process, uploading process, down, creating process, stopping process, etc. That those overhead you don't want to have in a game to measure, that you're measuring.
Actually, for that, I need probably another ESX installation. Because the package I have for the Perl, the library to do those changes, it comes with a VMDK image.
Mm-hmm.
Because I tried to install it from scratch, there are a lot of errors and going, so I just, the easiest thing I did it was downloading a VMDK.
I see.
So if I can place it on another server, run the VM, then it's
it's very straightforward.
But didn't you say that the clients, I mean the virtual machine has to be on the same ESX that you have enjoyed?
No.
It can be done remotely?
Yep. Because you pass the root in from the server ID as well in the script.
So it can be done across network?
You can do that too. Okay.
Or if you put everything on the same ESX, but you isolate their CPUs, right? You can...
No, because if you run the same script, it would take the CPU consumption. It will consume...
You can use CPU affinity, right? So you find your virtual machine on one CPU.
And also specific core also
as well.
Yeah,
we have a lot of cores. So
it's not a problem.
Yeah. I think you had a comment?
Yeah, I actually have just two small comments. One, I think you should avoid Perl as much as possible. I have not gone down too far down that path. I would say switch to Python.
The library or that Sajib wants to use to change virtual machine resource allocations uses Perl. Or
I think most of the APIs today, they always give you Perl binding, Python binding, Java binding. I don't think it would make any difference if you are using Perl or Python in terms of changing VM settings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think in general, Python is much more powerful, and Python is much easier to maintain and add. Perl is much more problematic to debug, and especially if you try to do it after 2 months, you would have forgotten what's going on, and it would be very hard to keep track of everything in Perl.
I see.
And second, I think in terms of from calling Java to C, you can also do IPC. Inter process, you can just send a message and then get the response back.
Yeah.
You don't have to, if you don't want to do anything fancy.
Yeah, I guess you could do that too. Yeah, but you have two processes then.
But you have to run the two processes continuously in the server.
Yeah. Which may or may not be an issue. Probably not an issue.
But what is coming out of this discussion is that this architecture needs to be chopped out very clearly.
Right.
Yeah, at the early stage. Otherwise, you may go into one path that may not be the most optimal one.
Okay.
It will have long-term implication.
Okay. I think our time is up, so
yeah.
We should wrap up and next week, same time.
Okay.
And meanwhile, Sajib, if you have updates, please send us over email as usual.
Thank you,
guys. Okay. Bye.
Okay, folks.
All right. Bye, Ajay. Thanks.
Bye.